You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Bum, 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 bum. Bum, 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 bum. I am vengeance. I am the night. I am Christopher Herman, one of two hosts of We Are Error, OneOfUs.net's premier video game podcast. With me is John, the boy wonder, Romo.
Really?
Yes.
That's what I have to
be? You're going to get pissed off when I did that.
I knew that. Is that why you didn't want to practice beforehand?
Yes.
Because you knew I was going
to
be so...
You. Now, John, you're going to put on those goddamn green tights for me right now, and you got to dance.
Drawing a horrible picture here.
Here's the thing. Like, I do see you as a Robin, but the best Robin. Tim Drake.
You know, I really actually like, what was the last one's name? The one who ends up dying?
Jason Todd?
No. I'm talking Grant Morrison's run.
Oh, Damian Wayne. Yeah. He's alive again.
Oh, again?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't
matter. Yeah. I mean, well, he was...
Everyone dies in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Alive. Jason Todd's alive.
He was killed.
He's Red Hood.
But the way they did with him was cool. I mean, yeah, Damian Wayne, he was like, he was killed. Then he came back and he got like a robot spine. And this was during the time when... Barbara Gordon was still Oracle, and just like looking at him like, what the fuck, man?
What I love is that, like, the explanation for why all of this makes sense is comic books.
Yeah, comics. But, yes, there is actually a reason why I had that suitably epic intro, you know, singing that classic Batman the Animated Series theme tune and doing that classic quote by Kevin Conroy. I mean, our big topic today is Batman in video games, and specifically we're going to be talking about, just his entire... history, everything from the 80s till now of like the kind of like the Arkham series and things like that, and also Telltale's new Batman series. But before we get into all that, before all that good Batman stuff, which we all love, the other thing I want to bring up actually about Batman, that song for the animated series is so damn good, and it's like, God, it just makes me feel so all nostalgic and happy. And then I remember forced to endure. The song, with quotation marks around song, in Batman v Superman, Batman's theme, which is basically just duh, 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 duh.
You know, so like, I got added to this network after Batman v Superman,
yeah.
So no one knows how much I fucking hate that stupid ass movie.
It, wish you were on the
review. It's literal ass. I've never screamed like that in Man of Steel. I hate both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I've never like actually made noise in a theater because you respect the art.
Yeah.
But like in Man of Steel, when Batman kills Zod, spoilers for a movie.
Or Superman kills Zod.
When Superman kills Zod, spoilers for a movie.
They both kill people.
Kill people. Oh my gosh! Do you not understand the character? Nothing.
No. No, I mean, yeah, it's, this new, I mean, sorry, we're going to bitch about the DC, or as I like to call it, the Zack Snyder DC Cinematic Murderverse. It's just awful. Zack Snyder says, I'm a fan of these characters, but you don't understand them. You don't really care. And so, yeah, I mean, I've been on record of saying that I hate these movies and just everything about them, and just burn it all, you know. But I'm glad that you hate them as much as
I
do.
Definitely.
But,
probably more.
But if we're going to continue talking about movies briefly, I will get to the games eventually, guys. There was this little trailer that came out yesterday during the Olympics, and I'm thinking, I'm not going to watch the Olympics because I don't care, which I don't know if you feel the same way, John. But,
dude, U.S. women's lost today in soccer. Sweden beat them in penalty kicks. I know you don't care. I don't watch the Olympics either, mm-hmm. but I love international play soccer.
Okay.
I just love when our nationalities, like, fight each other,
mm-hmm.
but in like a respectable way.
Okay,
it's like peaceful war.
I just don't care. I just kind of zoned out everything you were saying because it was just vaguely about sports.
Gymnastics are cool.
Gymnastics, yeah.
They do a lot of flips.
Yeah, yeah. Spider-Man, he does flips.
Spider-Man does flips. See,
yeah. Okay,
you can relate.
There are some gymnastic stuff with superheroes, but yeah. The most important part was that they released the Rogue One trailer in a weird time. It was like at least it was like 7:45, like. Central Standard Time or whatever it was, or 9, I don't remember, because I didn't care. But I watched it online, and I got to say, I mean, I was just very impressed by it. And I mean, the thing I came away with most is that how different it looks from not only The Force Awakens, but kind of all the Star Wars movies, and where it's definitely darker in tone. I like kind of that it has this kind of Dirty Dozen aspect of it. It's a suicide mission these people are going on, which I'm going to say it, most, if not all, these people are going to be dead by the end of the movie. And I think hopefully over time we'll get to care to them, and then, you know, it's not like in the prequels, we don't give a fuck about anybody. But I mean, I really just like that aspect of it, and just, you know, we're getting fucking Vader back, man. And not no Vader, but like true Dark Lord of the Sith, you know, Vader, I'm your
Vader
father.
In his prime.
Vader in his
Vader
prime.
From Vader down in the mm-hmm. comics.
Like, yeah, exactly, which you people should definitely check out. Marvel has been killing it with a lot of their Star Wars books. But, I mean, John, what did you think of the second trailer? I guess, no, the official trailer for Rogue One.
Well, what you'll learn from me now is I refuse to watch trailers after I already know I'm going to watch the movie.
Oh, shit, really?
Yeah, it just...
Oh, I just spoiled it all for you.
Yeah, you did. Thank you. See, in the age of the internet, everything is always spoiled.
I mean, Vader's in this movie. Spoiler. It takes place before New Hope.
I know, but I would have loved to, have gone in the theater and go, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
He's here.
I mean, in the trailer, they just kind of show him his back. Like, he's looking at this kind of Death Star projection. And you go, he's breathing and stuff like that. That's about it. And that's the tail end of the trailer.
Oh, okay.
Where the rest of it is kind of just... It's setting up the state of the galaxy. It kind of feels like a war movie. That's the other thing. It's surprisingly a lot more violent than I think any other Star Wars movie. Even from the trailer, it's people are getting blown up.
Yeah.
And I mean, you got people running serpentine. They escape AT-ATs and things
Well, the wonderful thing about this and why I'm way more excited about this than I was ever for Force Awakens is that it can be different because it's not a mainline story.
Yeah. No, I think that's the most important thing about this movie, and I think just kind of the future of these Star Wars films. Whereas I can understand why people, for the most part, the people who were kind of critical of Force Awakens, they said that it was basically a rehash of The New Hope. And I get that.
I mean, it is. It's also better.
To a certain extent, yeah. I mean,
it's therefore, because New Hope is the best Star Wars movie,
I mean, I'm
objectively.
Oh, that's true. Yeah,
therefore, I think Force Awakens is better than New Hope. So I actually think
I forget, you're a newbie when it comes to Star Wars.
Well, I still think, because New Hope is a full movie.
Yeah.
And I can't get over the fact that Empire Strikes Back is not a full movie. It just is cliffhanger central.
Right. I never thought of it that way, but I guess
only
that's true.
A movie. Mm-hmm. And also, there are parts in Force Awakens, no matter how much I'm just like, oh, that's a good movie, there are parts in that movie that make me cry.
Oh, yeah.
As, a minority character person who doesn't get to see many, strong...
Yeah.
Yeah. And just think about all the little minority kids and little girls who get to see,
themselves. I love how you said all the little minority kids. No, I get what you're saying. No, I mean, that was great. I mean, okay, we're going to gush about The Force Awakens for a second. Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed the movie. I thought the reason why it was, to a certain extent, a rehash of New Hope, because they had to reestablish the franchise, because the fucking prequels are awful movies. And they kind of ruined Star Wars for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. This was kind of like Disney and J.J. and Kathleen Kennedy coming in and saying, okay, we understand what you like about Star Wars, and then we're going to give that to you. To say, we love Star Wars too. And then it's going to be, of course, it's going to be familiar, but then we're going to move on to tell these different types of stories, which with Rogue One and hopefully with Episode 8. But, I mean, that's why I loved Episode 8 so much. And also, you said the minority characters, yes. I mean, John Boyega is fantastic.
Yeah.
You have Oscar Isaac, who's a, Latino actor. And he's amazing. I wish he was in the movie more. And clearly he will be in Episode 8. But no, I mean, yeah, that was thrilling to see where it's like, even the original trilogy, which I absolutely adore, there's not many minority characters, with the exception of Lando, who starts out as a traitor, which is not the best,
Don't trust the black guy.
No, Lando, great character, by the way. I mean, Billy Dee killed it, and we might be getting a new, younger Lando in the Han Solo movie, I'm really excited about.
That'd be kind of cool. Yeah.
Hope it's Don Glover. But, yeah, I mean, as it stands right now, I mean, I'm super excited for Rogue One. I love everything I'm seeing it. I particularly like the Imperial, reprogrammed Imperial droid used by the Rebels, which is played by Alan Tudyk. The droid's name is K2SO. And I don't know if you've ever played Knights of the Republic.
Mm-hmm. Dabbled.
You dabbled in it? Did you ever encounter a character named HK-47, who's one of the companions?
See, I know of him.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's pretty much like if a C-3PO was a psychopath. And enjoyed killing people. And this, I don't know if it's... I hope that it's kind of their version of HK-47, or at least honoring him to a certain extent. Because you see in the trailer, which I think is one of the best moments, it's like, oh, okay, I won't kill you. It's like, it's that kind of thing, where he speaks very plainly about it. He's like, yeah, I was thinking about it, but I was told not to, so I won't. So I thought that was great. And I hope, hopefully he says meat bag, which is a classic KOTOR line, which the HK-47 says to all the meat people that he meets he doesn't like.
What I love is somehow we found a way to bring it back to video games.
Yes, we did. See, there we go.
It was for a purpose.
It was on purpose. That's why we started talking about all this stuff. But yeah, let's get into the video game discussion. So, and let's start with the news. Some really cool stories this week. One which caught my attention, which was the another Metroid 2 remake was shut down by Nintendo. Yes, the long-awaited AM2R, also known as the another Metroid 2 remake, which launched actually August 6th, which was, I guess, last week, Friday?
Yes.
Yeah, it was actually just in time for the series' 30th anniversary. The fan remake, it's actually a fan remake of Metroid 2 The Return of Samus, which actually came out 25 years ago. And which was actually a Game Boy game.
Yeah, so it therefore doesn't get a lot of play.
Exactly.
So I think something like this is kind of necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Which, especially how Nintendo really is not great at getting everything up on that virtual console.
No, absolutely not. I mean, that's always been an issue. But I mean, yeah, initially the game was actually available as a free Windows PC download, and you can download off the any site really. But MediaFire, since then, it's been taken off, but you can obviously find it on torrent sites and anything like that. But the creator of the game, who's been working on this for, I think, since, like, 2012.
Yeah.
So for quite a long time. He's known simply as Dr. Mario 64, which I thought was really fun.
I wonder how you have to be pretty OG to get a handle like that.
Yeah, I mean, true. I mean, you can just tell from the handle that he's obviously a fan of Nintendo games. And that's why, of course, he's been working on this thing. But, he was actually talking about... even before that, he actually mentioned that a Linux version was actually in development. So people who want a Linux version, maybe that's what they want. But no, I think that's okay. But I mean, recently it was like a big update where he was kind of after he got all this copyrighted things thrown at him. It was specifically he was I think the individual's names were he received a letter from Miller, Nash, Graham, and Dunn LLP, who cited infringements of Nintendo's copyrighted material from games like Super Metroid, Metroid Other M, Metroid Prime, and of course Metroid 2. But recently he actually kind of gave an update to like talking about his experience like over these last several days, and he's saying that he'll continue to improve and fix AM2R like privately. So basically going underground with it, and I assume it's going to accidentally leak out again, probably even a more updated version. But yeah, then he kind of goes on to say that right now he's been like kind of making a living as a professional programmer, and thanks to what he's learned in developing games, he thinks he's going to obviously have a greater technical skill in the future, and specifically obviously improving A2M, a very odd name to say. Then he also kind of mentioned what the fan reactions have been since then. He's specifically saying the forum started to come alive with fans making feature suggestions and always being positive and optimistic about the project. I added new contents, trying to be respectful about the established lore. Demo after demo, people liked the game. Then the game came out, and for a brief time, players enjoyed it, and they were expecting, obviously, to play for a long time. And he also encouraged, like, for obviously when it was taken off and when Nintendo was throwing all this copyright at him, he had this to say, and, you know, instead of sending hate mail, get the original Metroid 2 from the eShop, which you actually can download. And then he said, show them that 2D adventure platformers are still a thing people want. And I think that was a very eloquent thing to say, even though he's clearly going to, I think, in my opinion, going to, you know, obviously he's going to keep working on it, but then also leak it out again.
Yeah,
of
course.
You know, I didn't mean to. It just happened. He's saying all the right things, and I appreciate that. Then Nintendo went on to say, and I thought this was funny. This was a statement they released, I think, to Polygon. Nintendo's broad library of characters, products, and brands are enjoyed by people around the world, and we appreciate the passion of our fans. But just as Nintendo respects the intellectual property rights of others, we must also protect our own characters, trademarks, and other content. The unapproved use of Nintendo's intellectual property can weaken our ability to protect and preserve it. or to possibly use it for new projects. And so, I mean, that's why they're coming out with, that's why they haven't made a Metroid game in over 6 years. And the next Metroid game we're all getting is, Metroid Prime Federation Force, which
is like a 3DS multiplayer game?
Yeah, it's a 3DS, yeah, exactly, which you, I think you play with three or four other players.
It is definitely what
soccer Metroid.
It's definitely what I imagine when I think of Metroid games.
Oh, yeah,
multiplayer,
right, yeah.
Handheld.
Absolutely, I mean, so I'm of two minds with this. One, I think Nintendo has every right to file this copyright against. I mean, that is...
Yeah, it's
theirs. I mean, it's their material. It's, I mean, how... You're using their characters. You can't do that. And so I get why Nintendo's justifiably upset about that. Mm-hmm. However, the Metroid kind of audience has been starved for many years. Again, the last Metroid game that came out was in 2010, and that was Metroid Other M, which was not good. I don't know if you played it.
I refused to.
Yeah,
because I heard it was awful.
It was not a very good game, but and now we're getting Metroid Prime Federation Force, which I'm like, ooh. So I can understand why people are upset at Nintendo, because frankly they haven't treated this property well, and I mean that could be because it has not sold well historically. I think there's been 11 or 12 Metroid games. I think combined they've just sold, I think, maybe slightly over 30 million units. That's combined, the entire saga of Metroid, which is, I mean, not much for supposedly a big franchise. It's a critical success, but not so much a commercial one. So that's why Nintendo's always kind of put on the back burner, as opposed to, like, obviously Mario or, Pokemon, which continue to make bank.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you have any kind of, like, other thoughts?
Well, my main thing is I love that he's going to keep working on it.
Yeah.
One, because it kind of comes across to me as, like, I love this game, and therefore I want to keep making this. And I love to see him rallying gamers in a positive way, because I think all too often the community is spotlighted when it's kind of toxic. Mm-hmm. And so moments like
that, that gets people's interest in a lot of cases.
But I always, and we'll get into it a little bit with another topic, I love when that passion that, you know, the community shares is spun in a positive light.
Yeah.
And I love that people are coming together, trying to figure out, hey, this is how we can improve it. This is what we can do. And the guy's still like, yeah, I'm going to keep working on it. And that professionally and personally, it improved his life.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think it's a positive story in a sense. I understand why they took it down, but like, give it some more time to breathe a little bit. And like, just because it's not going to hurt you that much.
No. I'm trying not to be negative. You're so positive, John. That's why I love you. But I'm thinking negative right now, where it's like Nintendo looked at the game like, fuck, this is much better than what we're going to be putting out. You know, obviously than their 3DS game, or also whatever the rumored Metroid game that that might come out on the NX. So, you know.
This is the most I've heard Other M mentioned in about 4 years.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, let's done talking about Metroid Other M, which you should definitely not play. But we're going to move on to some more Nintendo news. Another, actually,
fan project,
which is a Pokemon Uranium.
Hopefully lasts a little bit longer than a week.
Hopefully. This was also actually released on August 6th, funny enough. And, yeah, it's a Pokemon Uranium is a free fan game made using the RPG Maker XP. And you can download it right now on Pokemon Uranium. I forget the website.
I think it's just PokemonUranium.com.
Yeah, exactly.
/download.
Yeah, and you can download it, which I actually have myself. But yeah, I'll just kind of go into what the general synopsis of the game is right now. Pokemon Uranium takes place in the lush, diverse Tandor region, home to over 150 new and unique species of Pokemon. Tandor is known for its world-famous Tandor Regional Championship, where trainers from all across the Pokemon world compete for the honor of being crowned champion. In order to qualify, they must first collect all 8 gym badges from various towns and cities across the region. Sounds pretty standard Pokemon stuff, right? Yeah. But it goes on. This I thought was kind of interesting. The hero, a teenager who grew up in Moki Town, so adorable, begins their adventure reluctantly. After their mother, Lucille, disappeared 10 years ago in a nuclear catastrophe. Holy shit, that's a little different for a Pokemon game. Their father, Kellen, the top Pokemon Ranger in the Tandor Ranger Union, left the player to grow up with their elderly auntie in Moki Town. Now that they are grown up, they must leave their home and do what so many young people do and take up Pokemon training as an occupation. As we know, in the Pokemon world, slavery is a huge, huge thing right there. I mean, they love it. It's what it, basically that runs their entire society. They're like 1860s South in the United States, basically. Just tell yourself, without the racism.
Just tell yourself the slaves are happy, and you'll be okay.
Yeah, very true. But going to Professor Bambo, get it, Bam, because he's. Uses bamboo. Regional expert on Pokemon elements has been looking for a trainer assistant to travel the region and gather specimens of the varied wildlife. The main character volunteers, along with their rival, a younger boy named Theo, by the way, complete fucking douchebag. Just a horrible person. And even the professor's like, dude, what the hell is wrong with you? he makes Gary Oak look like a nice guy, in all honesty. Or I guess also known as Blue, if you played Red and Blue Pokemon. I don't like any of that anime nonsense. You suck Ash Ketchum. Anyway, moving on. After taking a test and receiving their starter Pokemon, they head towards their first gym challenge in Nawatok City and take their first steps exploring the Tandor region. However, things aren't as sunny as they first seem. Just when the accident 10 years ago had been all but forgotten, new mysteries emerge. A new power plant is built over the site of the old one. Kellen begins acting strangely, journeying to the far reaches of the region and questioning whether your mother is actually deceased. Sinister Pokemon, corrupted by nuclear radiation, threaten innocent people. In the midst of the turmoil, it seems that an impending disaster is looming over Tandor, and there might be only one person who can prevent it.
See, now, I don't know if it's just you reading it or a really well-written narrative, but
there's some mistakes in the narrative. Like the guy's like you, and then he goes they. It's like, what are you talking about? But go on, John.
No, it's just about. It seems like there's more dynamic angles.
It sounds mature.
Yeah, that's which I think I don't know what any of the Pokemon games are about. Like, I don't know narrative-wise what they're actually about. Yeah.
I mean, they're kind of all the same, where you play a 10-year-old, between, like, a 10- or 13-year-old kid, boy or girl, except in
you never have a
the
dad.
Early versions. You never have a dad. Dad's deadbeat, piece of shit. I left your mom.
But he does leave you the latest Nintendo console.
He does do that. Thanks, Dad. Thanks for the Wii U, asshole. But yes, yeah, your mom raises you. You go to whoever the professor tree. He's always named after a tree. Oak, elm. Whatever the hell the other guys are.
Pine, cedar.
What is that? I don't know any of those guys.
Cherry wood.
This is Professor Bambo. I like that name. He's basically a stoner professor.
Really?
He's got flip-flops on. He's got shorts. He's like, whatever, man. Do what you want. Take the test. Here's your Pokemon. Go. But no, I mean, it feels similar to Pokemon. But again, it's a story. It sounds so more mature and even darker to a certain extent. Yeah, your mom fucking died in a nuclear accident. Your father abandoned you. It's like, holy shit. It's basically the opening of the Godzilla from 2014. Mm-hmm. When Bryan Cranston's wife gets killed by the nuclear radiation when they're trying to run out of the power plant. It's basically that. That's the start of this game, which I've been playing it, and it pretty much starts that way. It's horrific.
But it sounds fun. It is. Like there are stakes.
It is. It to me, because I want to go, there's actually some really cool new features introduced in this game that's never been in any Pokemon game before. Mm-hmm. But, I lost my train of thought. What was the thing that,
stakes?
Oh, no, exactly, stakes. Yeah, exactly. Where, I mean, even when how the game opens, mm-hmm. where it feels so much darker. But going into like the new features of this game, there's a Pokemon speech translator, which allows for humans to communicate with Pokemon for the first time. So that kind of solves the issue that you always had when they just say Pika Pika.
Well, they're not saying anything.
Bulbasaur.
They're not talking.
Yeah, that's
Digimon.
You're about the Digimon stuff. But then they also introduce side quests. And that, you know, I mean, that's never really been introduced in a previous Pokemon game.
I think that's fine.
And yeah, I guess they said that most of these side quests, you actually obtain a unique Pokemon. So I assume it's like in a lot of cases, it's like the really rare ones, which mm-hmm. I think is cool. And they also have a new mode for the game, which I don't think there's any like hard or, you know, various kinds of modes in the other Pokemon games, but it's called Nuzlocke mode, which is an option that can be activated at the start of the game and cannot be turned off afterwards. There are only two core rules present in every Nuzlocke challenge. It's one, if a Pokemon faints, it is dead and cannot be revived ever. Mm-hmm. So you're fucked. And two, only the first Pokemon encountered in each route can be caught. the player fails to catch this Pokemon, they cannot catch any Pokemon at all on this route.
Which I love. That part, I really love that it was programmed into the game. Because I found out about the Nuzlocke run fairly recently.
Yeah.
And then Polygon's Griffin McElroy is actually doing a video series for X and Y doing a Nuzlocke run.
Yeah.
And I think that makes the game much more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes the ties to the Pokemon a lot deeper. So,
no,
like,
true.
You care about your team more.
It's like, I gotta take care of my slaves.
Like,
feed them.
Oh, Pidgey? I love you, Pidgey.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that's cool. Again, it's introducing, I mean, a new mode to these games. It's keeping it, it's different, which is what the Pokemon franchise has always needed for the last 10
I still find it strange
years.
That you can only have one save file per console for your Pokemon games. Always bothered me.
It's, again, it's kind of Nintendo still just behind the times, and they just repeat the same thing over and over and over and over again because they just, they can, and because they can coast on their legacy. I'm sorry, I'm turning this into a Nintendo, criticism podcast.
They're very upsetting.
They are, but, I mean, yeah, I've been playing it, and I can say I'm really enjoying it. I'm only, like, probably 2 hours in right now, but it's cool, like, the starters are, fairly unique, and, like, all the custom Pokemon, they're actually, like, stuff that I could see in actual Pokemon games, like Sun and Moon. If they ever announced, like, some of these where the stars would be like, I totally believe it. Yeah, okay. I mean, it's certainly better than the lamp Pokemon or some of that
Chandelure.
Other nonsense. Or is that what it is?
I think it's like Chandelure.
Then, yeah, Chandelure. Oh, my God. Or, like, the garbage bag Pokemon, which is just a Pokemon in a garbage bag, which
really?
Apparently is, like, a dark thing in the anime where it was originally like a Pikachu that got deformed and
what?
He just wears a garbage bag.
Oh man.
So it's like, oh, that's horrific.
I actually kind of like that. That's funny.
I may have made that up. But I think it might be true. But yeah, look, I think people should definitely check out Pokemon Uranium, especially because it probably won't be up there for that long.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Nintendo hasn't been like, you take
They're jotting
down
these ideas really quick.
They
like,
are jotting down this.
Put these in the bank. Put these in the bank.
They're contacting the two developers.
A nuclear type? Okay.
That's the other thing I thought was cool is that the nuclear type Pokemon where they're really, we never really encountered, like, evil Pokemon before. At least, not to my knowledge. Mm-hmm. Maybe in the anime, all that bullshit. But that these Pokemon are, yeah, they're very destructive, and they're basically, they're wild animals, and they're attacking people. And what's cool is that they're actually, all their moves are super effective against every type of Pokemon, but they're also weak against every single Pokemon.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So it's like, okay, if you capture a nuclear type Pokemon, I haven't yet, but if you capture a nuclear type Pokemon, you use that, like, it'd be the kind of thing where it's always a risk how you're going to use them. So it's a very much, they're kind of like glass cannons where they're super strong, but if they get hit, it's like, that might be it for them.
Yeah.
So I think that's really cool. I like the idea of nuclear Pokemon. And honestly, if people don't want to get Sun and Moon, they might want to check out Uranium. I certainly encourage people to do that. I think it's a really, really fun game. It's definitely in the style of kind of the original Pokemon games, though. It's the 2D sprites.
Yeah.
Not so much the 3D sprites.
I think it's just the complicated thing is, because I wanted to get it, and I was like, but I don't want to lug around my PC to play this game.
Sure. I mean,
I need to find a way to, like, sideload it maybe to an old Android phone.
Yeah, I mean, I'm playing on my laptop, and it's working out just fine.
Yeah.
So
it's just, I can't.
I get it.
I'm trained to play Pokemon in my pocket.
Yeah. I don't care, man, at this point. I mean, I'm not so much a handheld gamer, although I have been playing a lot with my 3DS recently, playing some of those old classic Nintendo games downloaded.
No matter how much we bitch, they still
Yeah, those are still quality games. You can't criticize them too much. But, yeah, moving on from that, continuing on with the Pokemon news, we also have some, for the legit Pokemon games, if that's how Nintendo, I think, wants to refer to them as, we revealed some new, like, Pokemon, apparently. And this new trailer, which probably shouldn't have come out, at least they didn't expect to release it, I think. It was, like, accidentally released a little too soon.
Yeah, so they just went ahead and
yeah.
did it.
But, yeah, there's, like, some... Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, there's some, like, new Pokemon, several water types, but some of the more interesting things were actually, like, the kind of, type evolution Pokemon, like Raichu, like, now Raichu...
Based
or, like, a version
region.
Of Raichu. Yeah. Is now not only electric, but also psychic.
Which I think is the most interesting aspect of this.
Because
I would love to see, like, a multi-region game where it's, like,
the same
type of, like, same Pokemon, but they vary based on where they are.
Yeah,
just sort
really
of like
cool.
animals are in nature
yeah,
in general.
Exactly.
Like,
you got brown bears, you got black bears, you got
polar bears.
Based
on your
bears.
Region, they evolve
yeah.
differently
mm-hmm.
because of their natural environment. I think that's a cool element to add into the Pokemon games. Mm-hmm. One that is also just... fits. It's kind of a natural evolution of how these creatures would grow.
And it extends like the Pokedex to like what, like thousands upon thousands of different.
And
Pokemon.
we don't have to get dumb Pokemon named Wishy Washy.
Yeah, or Wishy. Yeah, or what's
that's
the lamp?
A stupid name.
There's a lot of stupid Pokemon names.
That's a fish called Wishy Washy. You're running out of shit, Nintendo.
Yeah. I mean, you even had the... What was the lamp Pokemon called?
Chandelier.
It's like... there's a key ring Pokemon as well. It's just a bunch of keys on a ring.
What
are you doing?
There's a Pokemon that is literally a sword. It's just a sword.
I mean, to be fair, even the original 150, they had Voltorb and Electrode, which are basically just Pokeballs of eyes.
And just flipped colors. They're like, we need to round this out.
Yeah.
Flip the colors.
So even back in the day, like 96, 98, they were like running out of ideas like, shit.
But
what
it's
what
at
we
some
do?
Point, that's what I'm saying. At some point, it's like, let's stop adding bunk ass Pokemon and maybe like evolve the system, add new features, do something. Mm-hmm. I think that can change the game. Other than, I don't know, here's a donkey Pokemon.
Yeah,
we hadn't done that. Hey, there's a platypus one now too.
Oh, awesome! I mean, yeah, I totally agree with you. And again, it makes me interested to play Sun and Moon, which I definitely will check out. I was kind of let down with X and Y. I played Y because I just never got back to it.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe Sun and Moon can finally like get me playing AAA Pokemon handheld.
I feel like I say that every time a Pokemon game is released. Yeah. Maybe this will be the one.
I didn't feel that way until X and Y. Like, I didn't check out Ruby or whatever, the Black and White, or what are the other ones in between. I can't remember them.
Well, like, to me, like I said, it was more like I did Yellow, skipped, did Sapphire.
Man, you skipped, like, best one. Dude, Gold and Silver, love it, love it, love it. Great starters. Totodile, oh, love them. But not only did we're introduced to new Pokemon types and all different kinds and all the goofy names, we also know who the villains are in the next game. Team Skull, very nefarious sounding name, who is intent on bringing about the destruction of the Pokemon world. They kind of showed what they would look like, and they're basically a cross between hipsters and goths, and it's like, ugh.
I'm glad there is some variety in how they are designed, at least, though. Like, there's a ranking system to the team.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
I guess I'm just OG Team Rocket, man. I'm all about it. They got those jumpsuits and those hats. I like the original shit. Not all this, you know, millennial garbage. It's like, what is this? I don't care. But, yeah, I mean, other than the Team Skull reveal, I like what I saw with this... this reveal with Pokemon Sun and Moon. So, again, looking forward to playing it.
I just can't wait until they run out of ideas.
Yeah. No, Nintendo, they would never do that. But, yeah, so moving on from Nintendo and all that stuff, Sony confirmed that they're going to have a PlayStation media event in New York on September 7th at the PlayStation Theater, which is located in Times Square. It's rumored that they're probably going to finally show the PlayStation Neo or the several other names that it has. The PS4.5, yeah, PS4K.
I like that name.
Yeah, PS4K. Funny. I mean, that's the big thing, that it's going to be on 4K TVs.
Yeah.
Right.
It's going to be able to output 4K video.
Yeah, exactly.
Work
exactly.
4K games.
Yeah. It's just like, okay, that's fine.
And I think the big point is it, in terms of VR, you need a more powerful console. And I think it's the same reason that the Scorpio exists, is Microsoft's hoping to integrate Oculus or Vive, and it needs a more powerful console.
Yeah, I imagine we're also going to see some more PlayStation VR, which, again, my interest is probably more than ever had in the past, was peaked at this most recent E3, especially with Resident Evil 7.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, okay. Because before, I'm looking at these VR games, I'm like, this looks like fucking garbage, you know? I mean, yeah, cool, I can move around, but it's like they're chasing... It kind of... Before, like, the reveal of Resident Evil, it kind of felt like the Wii was happening again. Everyone was chasing motion controls, and it was just like, this isn't a great experience, really, aside from a few games which are fun, you know, play with your grandma and stuff. So hopefully, I imagine this will be different. It's going to... I mean, VR and Oculus are going to die on what the games are going to be put out on it. You know, if if those games are quality, and maybe it'll go on. But if the first batch are bad, that could sink it. So, but yeah, I'm excited for the PS4K or Neo, whatever they're gonna. I'm sure it's gonna have a different name, a better name. Because I actually like Scorpio. I think it's a cool name for the Xbox.
They're both just like
Scorpio's. I like that. It's like
Neo steampunk ass names. They're definitely code names. They're the definition of code names.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that.
I do wonder, though, before we move on.
Yeah,
Which one do you think is going to have more success?
That's a good question. Actually, I mean, one of the big stories this month was, or no, it was, yeah, for the month of July, I think, was, because we just found out today, that the Xbox One sold better than the PlayStation 4. Hmm. It sold more units. And I think that might be because the people know that eventually there's going to be a new iteration of the PS4 on the horizon, again, with this event, maybe.
Because I would have bought a PS4 by now, but I'm just going to wait.
Exactly. I mean, I own a PS4, and I definitely enjoy it very much, and I don't know if I'm going to buy a Scorpio or if I'm going to buy the PS4K, but I mean, until maybe the systems, my original systems are dead, which has happened several times with my Xbox 360 and my PS3. Ugh. But, yeah, I mean, what do I think will sell better? I mean, if I played safe, I would say PS4, because they just historically have been doing better this generation. Although the thing is that Xbox and Microsoft, they've been making huge efforts to correct all the mistakes that they did with the initial launch. I mean, they have been, so yeah, I appreciate just, that. I like when someone learns from their mistakes.
I really wish...
Unlike Nintendo.
I really wish Xbox would stop trying to run, like, four different OSs at the same time.
Yeah.
It just needs a complete OS redesign. I hope that comes with Scorpio.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, I think we'll learn about it in the coming months.
And I need some complete integration with PC. Let's just, like, put it what it is. Xbox, you're just a PC.
Yeah.
Like, in, like,
I mean, the PlayStation 4 is a PC.
I know, but I mean, like...
I mean, they're both PCs.
Completely embrace that market and just basically make the Xbox a Steam machine.
Mm-hmm.
And because then you have people developing both for Oculus and Vive and just take that, that's how you win, in my opinion.
I have one question. Will it still have achievements?
Duh.
Okay, good. All right. Because if it doesn't have achievements, I'm like, fuck it, I'm done.
I need my Chivo.
I need my... Oh, God, I'm addicted, man. I can't help it. It's my addiction. That and alcohol. Moving on from that. So there's a couple of big... Well, maybe not so big game releases. I think, for me, big game releases. But CJ Projekt Red, who, of course, is the developer behind The Witcher series, have announced that The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt Game of the Year Edition will be coming out at the end of the month, August 30th. Now... I think this is exciting because Witcher 3 was my favorite game of last year, and I've been a fan of the series. I thought, well, the first game was rough, although I had seeds of great ideas, especially because it was actually based on a series of Polish novels, which are pretty good, which you can actually get English translations of now, if you can find anywhere. But,
no,
so,
you
weren't familiar with that?
What people don't know is that Chris Herman here, fluent in Polish. Is that the language they speak? In Polish?
Yes. Polish? Okay. Yeah, it's Polish. Okay. Very good. Yes. Wow. Okay. That made me laugh. Yes, but yes. I mean, The Witcher is actually based on, like, Polish mythology and legends, which I think is really cool. CD Projekt Red is releasing their Game of the Year edition. I'm glad that we finally have a proper Game of the Year edition, because so many developers just like, yeah, there's Game of the Year edition of Dead Island. It's like, I don't think any website or publication nominated that thing for Game of the Year. Yeah. I think you just did. It's like, okay. But this deserves it, and it actually will be available for $50 or $49.99, whatever, on PlayStation 4, Windows PC, and Xbox One. They confirmed that it will actually come with all DLC and expansion packs, specifically Hearts of Stone, which was released in October of 2015, and most recently, Blood and Wine, which came, I think, in May, which, by the way, great, just a great ending to that series. It's so satisfying, and it's kind of fan service-y to a certain extent, but it's just so much fun, and it's clearly made for people who have just stuck with the series and who kind of fell in love with all these characters. Mm-hmm. Whether you romance them or form friendships with them, it's just great, and deals with, like, a vampire cult, which is really, really cool. And this is not like, you know, glittering vampires in the sun. This is like giant monster vampires, you know, infecting the city and ripping people apart. Awesome, awesome. And one of your best friends is actually a vampire, and he's super nice. So I hope everyone checks out The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. I think it's great. And it also comes with all the free DLC that was also released throughout its entire run. I think there was like 20 or 25 pieces of free DLC, and some of those small stuff like new, like items, and maybe like a handful of quests. But I think that's really cool, and I hope people definitely check it out.
Well, I really look forward to finally playing The Witcher 3 in 2021.
Oh, geez,
that's what my watch says.
Yeah, well,
finally get to it in 2021.
Like you mentioned, you can't play.
I'm just bad at that.
A third. Yeah, whatever.
I have The Witcher 1.
It's the first game of the series.
I have The Witcher 1 and 2 on PC, when I found out Witcher 3 was coming out. Because I was like, I know that game's going to be good, but I also know I cannot play it unless I play through the first two.
Yeah.
Really, my suggestion, just be to watch like a 5-minute video on what happened in Witcher 1 and be like, okay,
and then just start playing Witcher 2. Because it's a huge... Excuse me. It's a huge leap from what the first game was. The first game, I'll be honest, is not that good, but mm-hmm. I just like the world so much.
I got into this conversation.
Two is very good. You can start... They introduce you to the world so well in two. It's like, this is what happened. This is what you need to know. This is who you're fucking. Go, 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 go.
See, I got into a similar conversation with my roommate while he's going through Uncharted 4.
Oh, well, you need to play all the
well,
games
like,
in that series.
No, it's
except,
like,
except Golden Abyss. Ignore that shit.
It's because it's like... You just go, yeah, all these games are great. Mm-hmm. Well, the first one's good now. Like, now it's just kind of good.
No,
but
the first
you have to play it.
No, the first one's date. I mean, yeah, the first one... I mean, that's the thing. I think the game came out in 2007, which, yeah. It's not that long ago. But for video games, it can be.
And it was an early PS3 game.
And it was an early PS... It was kind of the one where it put PS3 on the map for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I mean, Uncharted 2 really was that game, but mm-hmm. Uncharted 1 was like... get my PS3 for this kind of Indiana Jones knockoff. And eventually Uncharted just became this huge monster of a series that just got kept getting better. Kind of dipped with 3 to a certain extent. And
I don't even think it dipped with 3. I think it's just the leap between 1
some,
and 2.
It has some huge pacing. I think... No, I get that. No, continue with your thought.
Just the leap between 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Having to go between 2 and 3 then felt like, oh, well, it's just as good. And
see,
so people met it with tepid expectations.
See, people say that, people who think...
I think the third one's just as good.
3, to me, has significant pacing issues. Especially, like, the first third of the... I mean, I know people... This is sacrilegious to some people, but I did not enjoy the flashback sequence when you're young... Spoiler, when you're young Drake
mm-hmm.
and you first meet Sully. I just thought, okay... I'm being a little kid, and I gotta find the thing in the museum, and then I'm running on these rooftops. Okay, I didn't care for that, and I just thought like there's just, and then it was when Naughty Dog was like, okay, we are the cinematic developer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our games feel like movies, and we're gonna make you play a sequence that might as well just be a cutscene, which is the whole desert sequence, and where it's like, oh, I gotta play this. It's like, and it's like goes on for like 20 or 30 minutes. It's like, guys, you're killing the pace for this game. I think that's my biggest complaint, where I think it had really bad pacing issues. That's just me. So, but is it a beautiful looking game? Absolutely. Does it play well? Yes. Does it have great voice acting? Does it have a fun story and characters? Absolutely. But again, it's the pacing, which I thought Uncharted 2 pacing, they kept amping it up, and they occasionally had those quiet moments, but they were in cutscenes, which is what I liked about that.
Talking about these games, this is something I've been kind of sitting on for a while.
Yeah.
I was just like driving and this hit me. Is Naughty Dog the best game developer? Like on a track record by track record, like just looking at them, I think they are my favorite game developer because the Crash series is great. It's
people,
fun.
People have nostalgia.
It is
that.
Fun as hell. Jack and Daxter, that is like, maybe I was like 10 and 11 and 12 or
yeah.
whatever,
yeah.
but they were my favorite games.
No,
still,
sure.
Of the PS2 mascot era, Jack and Daxter is my favorite. Jack X is a fine kart racer, and I bet CTR is also a fine kart racer.
I will say
racer.
Crash Bandicoot Racer, whatever the game was called, that was actually good.
And all the Uncharted's are like
no,
9s and 8s, and I look forward to Uncharted Racing. It's got to be great.
Hopefully they won't do that. No, I think there's definitely an argument to be made that they are the best developer. Right now I'm thinking of who's kind of their equivalent in this industry, and I can't name.
That's the thing.
Single.
They've stuck around
they have.
Through
yeah.
the generation.
They have. They've done such a great job, and I mean the Uncharted series as a whole, even though I thought what is one dated, sure, but still fun. And again, even though 3 has its pacing issues, I still played through that game twice because I enjoyed it. I just don't think it's as good as 2 or as good as 4.
But it's still, if you want to show someone,
yeah,
like, this is what games can be.
No, exactly.
And this is
it's
like,
you introduce them to Uncharted.
Yeah.
Or in another case, The Last of Us, which I think is probably, I think it's the best PlayStation 3 game. I think there's an argument to me where it is the best title.
I still hate that ending.
Oh, man.
It makes
I
me so upset.
I love that ending.
No, I mean, it's good from a, like, yeah, art. But, man, I'm just mad because I, like, really love L.A. and it's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay. Like, I think that's the point, is that by the point you're there, Naughty Dog has you feeling things.
Yeah. I think what we need to do is that we need to have, for a potential main topic for a future episode, talking about Naughty Dog and their history, and specifically, you know, my movie with you of Crash and Jack, because you have that
I did
experience.
Grow up. That's my
I know.
Era.
I that's when 3D platformers and I went. We went bye bye. Sorry, it's not for me anymore. Like Sly Cooper was kind of my last 3D platformer series. I'm like, I like these, but after that, it's like I'm not a. I could do without it.
I'm all about platformers.
I know, that's but I think yeah, we should definitely do an Uncharted. A main topic podcast eventually talking about the series or Naughty Dog, excuse me, and they're talking about all their
well
their
I'm
games.
Sure Uncharted will crop up when we talk into the year.
We certainly will. And right now I'll say I think Uncharted 4 is still my favorite game of the year. There's definitely some awesome games, you know, but Uncharted 4 to me is still number one. Has yet to be beat. But moving on from that, we originally started with Witcher. Yeah, everyone should check out Witcher 3.
You know, I really
love,
I think the podcast is finally finding its voice, mm-hmm. where we completely
lose
the topic
after
2 minutes.
That's what people
minutes.
Want, though. They want us to hear our opinions on all kinds of video games. And so now you know, I really like the Uncharted. I think the Uncharted series is probably arguably one of the best series out right now.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
And then I have some problems with 3, which isn't too unusual. But moving on from that. We have some Titanfall 2 single-player details. Of course, as people know, Titanfall was kind of the first big Xbox One game. I think it released in 2014, I want to say.
Yeah.
It was 2014. I think it also eventually released on PC as well, or during the same time. I know there was an Xbox 360 version of Titanfall, which came out later. I think it was like several months. But I think there also might have been a PC release of Titanfall. People can correct me in the comments if that isn't the case. But one of the big complaints with the original Titanfall was that it didn't have a single player. I mean,
that it wasn't good.
It kind of had it had like a multiplayer single player, but it really wasn't. It's just you're just playing the multiplayer maps in these different modes, and there's like a narrative going on in the background. Now, John is whispering all this kind of nonsense about it's half a game. Now, I'm just going to briefly go into it. Like, I actually really enjoyed Titanfall as a multiplayer experience because it was, I think it was it might have been my first Xbox One game, and I just thought. The developer who is, is it Respawn? Respawn, thank you.
Or, you know, OG Infinity War.
True, I mean, yeah, they were the people behind,
One of the
Modern
greatest
Warfare.
FPSs of all time.
Yeah.
Call of Duty.
Yeah, it still holds up. It's a very good game. People should, I mean, definitely play that.
The only reason I'm excited for Infinite Warfare is so I get that remastered.
The remastered version, which looks beautiful. I really liked, the first Titanfall. Is it a game where I go, oh, is this a game of the year? Like, this is like, oh, this is the best? It's like, no, but I thought as a multiplayer experience, it was great. I thought it played very well. I love the verticality of the matches, how you use, like, your jump pack and that you can, like, scale walls and run across walls. It was very fast-paced. And the controls for it were just so easy to figure out, like, after, like, a match or two. And before, it's like, yeah, I died quite a bit, like, in my first match. By the time I started my, like, third or fourth, I was getting up there on the leaderboard, you know, of the match leaderboard. I really enjoyed the game, although I will agree that it should have had a single player, because I think that would have extended its life, because, sadly, the game has, the online, like, multiplayer for the game has died, sadly. But, I mean, that's my perspective. To me, if I were to give it a rating, I'd give it 8 out of 10, exploding titans. But John, what's your opinion on Titanfall? And before we obviously go into the single player details, but
it was thin. Mm-hmm. I think thin for me is the best way to describe it. Just like, I don't know. It actually made me appreciate Call of Duty, which was weird.
Okay.
Because I was at that point where, like, I don't care about Call of Duty. I don't care about it now. I'll just play it, like, I'll buy it just so I have a game to listen to podcasts to.
Yeah. Because
that's all I use Call of Duty for.
Get those achievements.
Just to shoot people. I'll beat it on Veteran, because that's what I've been doing since Call of Duty 4.
Yeah.
But it just felt floaty, but not tight, like Halo is. Because Halo's a little floaty, but it's also just everything about that feels tight.
Yeah, I don't know.
But something about
tight.
Titanfall is just very, like, just no stakes, no anything. Killing bots, knowing that there are characters on the battlefield that aren't actual people, made me just feel like, well, then why am I playing?
I mean, a lot of that was like,
I could just play Nightfire on GameCube.
Nightfire was good.
That's what I used to do.
But yeah, no, same. I did that as well. But no, I mean, the bots were, yeah, they were dumb as fuck. They would just stand there and be like, and they would maybe occasionally turn around to shoot at you. They were really dumb. Hopefully.
And it takes some of the joy.
I wasn't sure why they did that. Maybe it was just to pad out the level.
It just, like, took a lot of the joy out of it. Because I think it sounds weird, especially as someone who's kind of a pacifist.
Yeah.
that like shooting someone is that's the enjoyment because you like beat them in a competition. Well, when you think you're doing it, and then all of a sudden it's just a computer. You're just like, well, why am I playing?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. For me, it worked. Although I know a lot of people had those same criticisms that you did, and so I'm hopeful that they address that with the Titanfall 2. And specifically, I mean, yeah, they're introducing obviously single player, and we'll just kind of briefly go over it. Where I mean, this is kind of the synopsis of the story, but players will take on the role of Jack Cooper, a grunt-level rifleman in the Frontier Militia, who are introduced in the first game. Cooper has aspirations to one day become a pilot under the tutelage of Captain Latimosa. So at the start of the campaign, Cooper and Latimosa find themselves dealing with like a botched militia operation in which they've crash-landed on this alien world of Typhon. Which actually, that's the name of a Star Wars planet from the Knights of the Old Republic. And I'm like, hey, I heard that name before. Eventually, you just run into all these things.
Also an EA game, right?
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. Okay, there you go. That planet is inhabited by enemy soldiers from the Interstellar Manufacturing Corporation, IMC. So not only are you a military organization, but you're also a corporation, so you're definitely evil if you have all that. And equally dangerous indigenous wildlife around the planet. With Latimosa mortally wounded, it's up to Cooper to revive and bond with his captain's Titan, BT-7274, also known as just BT, and rescue his fellow Frontier Militia members. So, I mean, it's kind of a very standard single-player military FPS, you know, story. But the thing about it, and I kind of like about the trailer, is that they're really hammering home this relationship between BT and Cooper, and I really like that. So it's like a dog and his boy type of thing, which, again, we've seen so many times.
Yeah.
But we haven't really seen that in, like, a standard first-person shooter. At least not recently, not to my memory. I think that could be fun.
No, the last time I cared...
It's basically, you know, honestly, it's the Iron Giant. It's where you got Hogarth.
That would be cool.
If the Titan dies, which he probably most assuredly will,
yeah.
I want him to go, Superman, at the end, and then die.
I just want to watch the Iron Giant now.
No, I do too.
That's kind of it.
But are you at all excited for Titanfall 2?
No, not at all.
Okay. No. Well, I am, and I'm definitely going to play it, and I will definitely... That'll be the one where I'll review it by myself. But moving on from that, we have some Hitman news, which, yes, Hitman is still going on. Of course, people might be upset about that because a lot of people think, you know, obviously that's Square Enix and the developer, which I think is IO,
mm-hmm.
Kind of botched this latest iteration of Hitman. But on Twitter, a fan asked if there'd be more seasons in this new iteration of the Hitman game, which, again, it's been kind of... like put out there like piecemeal like levels from mm-hmm. like you got like the Italian level this you know villa and 6 months later you know a couple months later we'll give you whatever the next thing is and so yeah it's very piecemeal and they kind of the fan who asked the question said is there going to be a season two and IO replied not only or the Hitman Twitter account not only replied that not only you can get a season two but they'll eventually get a season three even though it hasn't been announced yet and it's like okay. My whole thing is that I wouldn't count on that,
mm-hmm.
especially because I don't know how well this game is selling. I don't even know if you can track how well this game is selling because it's basically pieces of DLC that managed to Frankenstein monster create this game. I, like, it's funny. Have you heard about what was the most recent mission that you can download for Hitman?
Mm-mm.
The target that you can potentially kill is Gary Busey, the actor. The mentally ill Gary Busey.
Wow.
And it's so bad. It's, I mean, it's not gameplay-wise. The gameplay is sound. It's just, like, the structure of how they're giving this game, like, selling this game is kind of so obnoxious. And the fact that, oh, yeah, well, it'll be a season two and a season three, which to me means you're going to probably, like, overall pay, like, over, like, $160 for this thing, if not more. I mean, it's going to get up there, $180.
I definitely appreciate their commitment to something no one cares about.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's episodic gaming. They're trying to capitalize on what Telltale popularized in the last kind of couple of years.
Telltale has narratives.
Except with Telltale, and they're cheap. They're $5 yeah. per episode. So, I mean, yeah, I'm not so sure about this. I mean, for people who do care about Hitman. On August 16th, they'll be releasing the fourth chapter in the game, which is a mission set in Bangkok. So if you're into that, there you go. And then if you're looking forward to the season 2 and season 3 of Hitman, if that does indeed happen.
Let us know, because I want to know who the hell you are.
Let us know. I mean, I was an old school fan of the Hitman series.
Just play Blood Money.
Blood Money's my favorite.
It's a good game. Blood Money's fun.
Hitman 2, it's... Yeah, probably if I go back to it, I'd be like, when did I ever like this game? But why did I like this game? But I remember having fond memories of that. I also played Absolution, which was kind of the in-between this most recent Hitman game and Blood Money. I thought it was... It took like 6 or 7 years for that game to come out. But I thought it was good, but it was definitely a different approach to the Hitman
formula. It's just they're holding on to a franchise that I don't think really needs to be out.
It'll die when they make that third movie. By the way, you should definitely not see those two movies. But
I didn't see the second one.
We're going to move on to bigger and better things. We are talking about Inside, which...
Yay, a good game!
Which is a very good, which actually reviewed in our first episode. But it's been revealed that it's coming to PS4.
Because of course
it is. Yeah, of course it is, on August 23rd. I mean, this was a bit of a surprise to me because... Okay, so Limbo was originally released on the Xbox 360 in 2009. And it was exclusive for, I think, Xbox 360 and PC. I'm going to bet money on that. And then a year later, it actually came to PS3. And so we assume, like, oh, this is going to happen to Inside, where it's going to be an Xbox One, PC, whatever, exclusive for a year, and then it'll eventually come out to PS4. Not the case. The fact that it's coming out the August 23rd, it's like, that was a big surprise for me.
How soon? How soon, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, yeah, I thought it would be at least a year,
yeah,
if not more. But yeah, it's like that it's going to be out in a few weeks. What, 2 weeks? Less than 2 weeks. It's like, I mean, that's crazy.
Well, I can see it, like... Why would Microsoft pay for exclusivity for a year for a game that is just 3 hours?
Sure.
Like, everyone who would have been really interested, I think, would have bought it by
now. Yeah, exactly.
And I don't think a game like Inside, brilliant game as it is, that's not why I'm going to buy an Xbox.
No, I agree with that. And obviously, I think Playdead, who's the developers of the game, they obviously want to sell as many copies as possible.
Yeah.
And they probably, I think they were probably approached by Microsoft, who said, like, look, we want to have your game on our system first, because kind of people associate Limbo with Xbox, so if you please, we can have an exclusivity deal of some kind. And Playdead probably agreed to that, because you're getting paid for that, but they said, but this thing's coming out to PS4 much sooner. And they're like, okay, fine, but we'll get all the people to play it on Xbox One first.
Third-party exclusives aren't really a thing.
Yeah. No, that's very true. Well, yeah, unless they're like temporary exclusives, like Tomb Raider, which came out last year, which apparently did not sell very well, because they released the same week as Fallout 4. Not the smartest decision.
Not a good call.
But that's actually coming out to PS4, I think, either this month or next month, I want to say. But it's definitely this year. So, but yeah, if you want a PlayStation 4 players, you want to check out Inside, I'm sure you'll definitely enjoy it. We certainly did. And please watch our, or listen to our first episode where we review it. Yeah, so moving on from that nice big announcement with Inside coming to PS4, let's talk about the Inside ending and also any potential theories that we have. So as we said before, we reviewed Inside, we both really liked it. I gave it a 9.5 husks, dead husks, I think you gave it like 9 throat cuts or whatever it was, something horribly graphic.
Some sort of ancillary thing.
Yeah, but of course we kind of avoid some of the big spoilers, particularly the ending. Let's just get into it. I mean, John, what was your initial impression of the ending, or that ending sequence, really?
I thought the sequence was, as a player, was actually really fun, to just the way you controlled the blob and everything. I think that was a lot of fun, and I was also very confused the entire time.
Oh, sure.
Because I thought, I don't know, I was a little disappointed too with the way it ended, because I wanted the boy to be okay. You spend so much time with him.
He got Cronenberg, Morty. Everybody's turning all Cronenberg. It's Cronenberg this world up.
It is just like you spent so much time with him, and like I had mentioned
in the first episode
that like I actually cared for the character.
Yeah.
One who doesn't talk, one who doesn't even have a face. And so just for him to get sucked into the blob, I was very like taken aback by like, oh, what's happening? And then you keep going, and then I just, like, sat and watched the blob.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, sat there because I was like, well,
what do I do?
Where's he coming? Is he coming out?
Oh, sure. At the very, very end. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, yeah, for people who don't know specifically what we're talking about, like, towards, like, the very kind of last 20 minutes of the game, when you go into this kind of testing chamber in this water, you encounter this, basically this husk blob, and where you're trying to kind of release it, It grabs you with its many, many arms, which, again, just it's this fleshy, disgusting mass, and absorbs you into itself. Basically like, you know, the Thing from, you know, John Carpenter's classic 1982 film. Yeah, and you become it. And then the entire, like, just gameplay changes, where instead of being, like, running away from people, you're just fucking mowing through this facility. You're breaking
physics.
Shit. It's so much fun. And again, it's how they use sound as well, because it's like when you fall, it's like all these different voices come out from the Thing.
Yeah.
Because it's the Thing. It's made of all these different people. And like the splat noises it makes, it's all flesh. It's just very disturbing. I particularly love the sequence where you break into that one guy's office, like the boss guy, and he's like pressed up against the window. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to do it. Just run forward. You break the window, he's falling with you, and you just crush him. He's like, he just explodes into the blood and guts.
The last 26, the last segment is funny. Kind of a thing too.
I think it's at first it's horrific, and then it becomes those moments.
It's kind of comedic.
Yeah, kind of comedic in a lot of ways.
And I love how if you'll notice, there's an instance because you still kind of have to do a little bit of a puzzle solving.
Yeah, there's some stuff. Yeah.
That the workers start helping you a little bit.
No, that's
out
a big
fear.
You think that's out of fear initially, and even before you get to the point when because I thought this was very interesting. I thought, oh, the game's going to end like this. When before the workers start helping you. You need to get this box, whatever, or you go to this. You got to throw this box in this furnace. Mm-hmm. You eventually figure out you need to do that. Where before, I just went to this furnace area and I opened it up and it's all fire. And I'm thinking, holy fuck, am I supposed to kill myself? Like, did you have that moment where you thought, oh, I need to kill myself? That's the end of the game. That's what this has all been leading towards. Like, I become this monstrosity. I'm like, I'm not going to live. I'm not going to let these people control me. So I'm going to end it on my own terms. I mean, did you think that you could kill yourself? I mean, you found out you couldn't, but did you initially believe that?
I think, especially the way I play these kinds of games, I push it.
Always.
So, I at least tested it out, just to, like, do I go in there?
Yeah.
You know? I think playing games for so long, you're kind of trained
to
do those kind of things.
You see if you can, either break it or are these, like, these hidden secret options that you didn't realize.
Yeah, half the time I die in games like this, it's because I'm like, it looks like a pit,
sure.
I bet there's a collectible there.
Yeah, what Playdead is really good at is making you be very experimental with your choices. And, I mean, that's kind of the point where you're going to die multiple times trying to figure out these puzzles, but that's part of the journey.
Yeah.
And you're going to be horrified by it. But, I mean, that particular sequence, I was like, oh, I got to kill myself. But eventually you find out that, no, I have to actually burn this box to activate this certain thing. And then you start to see all the workers starting to help you. I mean, they definitely seem terrified of you, but they're like, because initially I'm like, oh, wow, maybe there's people, again, it's you just don't know, but maybe there's people in this facility that are against all this stuff, and they realize, like, yeah, we created this thing, but we want it to be free.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just one point when initially that, because you're destroying this facility, it's this giant thing, you're just smashing through and falling through, like, concrete floors and things. But there's one point where you land in this diorama, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, diorama. And you land in actually in the exact spot that you do at the end of the game, where it's that, right near that lake. And, like, you're in that little piece of, like, the lake bank or the coast right there. I'm thinking, oh, that's interesting. And then you start to see that, I don't, like, when people are trying to help you, they're, like, leading to this place. And they lead you to this place and they try to trap you again. But before that, did you notice in the background it was a giant auditorium of people? And it was hundreds of people sitting there. And there was, like, kids, like, in circles. Play the game again or check it out on YouTube. You're in an auditorium when you're trying to grab at the box. It's a whole auditorium filled with people. You don't notice it at first. I didn't notice it until I'm like, oh, fuck, there's people watching me. And there's like little kids and there's people smoking in the background. And I'm thinking, is this whole thing on? Did they do this on purpose? Was this just one of their experiments? Was the little kid they released maybe into the wild? And maybe there's something in him that he realizes I need to get to that facility.
It's a test. To see whether the blob can control something.
Yeah, or something. Or, like, maybe this, again, it's just this whole thing's a giant experiment. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're led to believe that this whole game, or, like, the theme of the game is control. It's like, I mean, these husk creatures that you encounter, they're controlled. You control them. They're controlled by other people. They're meant to do these kind of small tasks and things like that. And you progressively just start to see this occur again in the game. And then I will say that I thought the ending was kind of disappointing when you escape the facility, or at least you think you do. It could be just another part of the test. And you kind of finally are at peace.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you die, or you're just like, was I just designed to get to this point, and now I can't do anything because I've been created to just be here at
See,
this point.
I think again. That's why I didn't like the original ending, because it felt to me, I thought I just died.
Yeah,
like that the blob ran out of energy or hurt itself, so it just died or didn't know what to do next.
I know. I initially thought that, but now that as I'm talking about it, I like the ending a lot more now. Thinking if that's again, it's the story is very obtuse, and we're led to basically do this to come up with theories to think like, okay, what was this all about? And maybe now that I've talked about it, and you've certainly and you've added to it as well, I just like I kind of like their ending now. Now that I think about it, but the secret ending that you mentioned, yeah, I found that kind of I didn't like that. Now, if you want to go into that.
I love that one. Mm-hmm. What you throughout the game, you run into these little collectibles that are kind of these little orbs
yeah.
that are giving off a little bit of sound and emitting light
or
and
power
you,
sources.
Yeah, and you disconnect them. If you found all of them, I think it's 20 or 12. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, it's around 12. There. It's like in that. The teens.
If you find them just before the final sequence, you'll run into another light source. And if you go back,
a giant one.
Yeah, and if you go back to the farm. Where you found an original collectible, mm-hmm. there's a light to
the second one.
Yeah, there's a light to an entryway to the right, the opposite direction of the orb. You put it in the sequence to recreate the music you've heard every time you found an orb.
Yep.
And opens the door, and you walk through a corridor, and in the background you can kind of see like screens.
Yeah, computer banks
and
like that.
Those
yeah.
The helmet one of those helmets that you wear.
It's hooked up to every
yeah
like all
so,
these
like,
wires are hooked up to
all
this,
over the place
yeah, the helmet yeah.
and you just like. Creep past it and you walk to the end of the hallway mm-hmm. and all there is a plug
yeah
and the little kid unpulls the plug and the NCM pulls the plug he falls to the ground like it resembling when you wear the helmets and you disconnect the helmets and those husks just fall to the ground
mm-hmm. so you think
so to me
so what do you think
yeah. I liked it more because in that instance I read it more as because like I said I had kind of grown a connection to this kid character.
Yeah, he's and cute in a horrific kind of way.
And so in that instance, I felt it like that the kid was like, no more.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah.
And just unplugs himself.
End of the experiment. Actually, now that you said it, I didn't think of that at the time. It's like, oh, that makes sense. Maybe the computer was like a program and the helmet was somehow transmitting to the kid and that was controlling him, but he somehow found a way then unplugged it. That makes sense, actually. No, I do like the
like,
ending.
Sort of like
now that you explained it.
Yeah,
in
like
way.
Sort of like yeah. the orbs weaken the signal.
Yeah.
Or, and so he can kind of gain more control. Mm-hmm. And the you know, theories are like the blob is controlling the kid through the thing or
yeah, exactly. There's
or
so many.
You know, it's just you controlling the kid through the thing,
yeah.
breaking the fourth wall. But in either one of those cases, I see that secret ending as him like weakening that
yeah.
control over him and him pulling the plug.
Okay.
Like, I'd rather die on my own than follow you.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I'd rather die looking somewhat normal and not a horrific Cronenberg monster.
Yeah.
And
it plays, like you said, with those themes of control. Mm-hmm. And I think that one just, like, for someone who connected with the character,
yeah,
resonates more with me, and it's just a happier ending in a way.
Okay, yeah, it's happy. I get yeah,
as
it's
happy
certainly,
as
again, happier than
get.
Becoming a giant blob monster.
Yeah.
Certainly, yeah,
and just dying on the
again.
Beach.
I'm yeah, even though because people have come out and kind of say, well, you know, very interesting game, very atmospheric, but no story. But and I would agree. But the fact that we're having a conversation about a game which you can beat in 3 hours, I mean, I think that's an achievement in itself.
I yeah. got more excited finishing the game and getting to dig through wikis and
yeah.
hearing other people's theories and expounding on it. It's like, this is what games do. This is why gaming is actually an art form.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can have these discussions. It makes you think. Because that's what art is supposed to do. It's supposed mm-hmm. to make you think and think about different themes and, like, what does control mean? It's a callback sort of to one of the instances of why I think Bioshock's such a great game.
Sure.
Is like the last little reveal is like makes you think about everything that you had done. It makes you reflect on the entire experience. And I think
yeah.
that's what the best games do, is make you reflect on your entire time with them.
Would you kindly? Yeah, love it, love it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, people should, I mean, everything that John and I said, if that doesn't make you want to buy the game, I don't know what does. So please, please check out Playdead's Inside, whether if you want to get it on the Xbox One, PC, or PS4.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. This is John. I'm just coming in to tell you that we're actually going to end the episode a little early right here. We dove really deep into the later history of Batman and video games, specifically the Arkham series, And we also had a special guest join us to give our opinions on Telltale's recent version of him in the second part. Actually, so much so that we ran a little long. So we decided to hold part two until this Friday. So be sure to keep an eye out for it in your feeds. And there might be a nice gift in your future if you do. Hint, hint.